Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Well, 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 welcome back to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners, however you've decided to spend this hour with us. We're really, really glad to have you. I heard Val introduce the show during Folk Oasis just before our show, and she pointed out it is the ideal show to be listening to all the time, because even though Valentine's is coming up next week, I honestly think Valentine's Day should be 365 days a year. But during Valentine's Day, it's a good opportunity to do that relational check-in and really check in where you are in terms of your life for self-care as well as your partner's care as well. And that is why tonight's topic is all about putting the I back into the relational team. And I've got the best person to bring us to that and give us some tools to figure out where we're at and how we can move forward in our lives. I've got Anne Whitmore from Diva Fish Communications with me, who is a wonderful life coach and is becoming a dear friend as well. And welcome to the show, Anne.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So tell me a little bit in regards to putting the I back into the relational team. What does that mean?
I've heard so often people talk about team, and the saying is there's no I in team.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about that, the reason behind it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
We want the team to work together. We want to achieve the team's goals. And if we all have competing agendas, it's really hard to get things done.
Yeah.
But what I also find is that people then think that they have to check themselves at the door. And so there's this team becomes an entity of people that all agree and that just do what they're supposed to do, rather than really taking their individual strengths,
mm-hmm.
all the things that make them unique and a valuable asset to that team, so that together they actually create something bigger than the sum of the individuals. And synergy is a term that, you know, is so popular right now and
mm-hmm.
is thrown around a lot, but it really is true. The more I can understand your perspective and really harness the things that you bring to the table, then we actually have something really powerful.
Which I think that's really beautiful, and I think that's what everybody wants. We want to be part of things. Actually, Vancouver Foundation just released a study not that long ago called the Vital Signs Report about just how important it was for people's sense of self-esteem to feel that they belong to something, and especially when it comes to relationships with their friendships, etc. So what are some key things that people might be able to do even before the dating process? But like,
you hear either people in love or someone that really is done with relationships,
mm-hmm.
or someone that's really dying to be in one.
Yes.
And so that's a great question. And the thing is, I think it really starts with yourself. Until you really know who you are and know what you want,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to have anything to give to somebody else. And so that's the great place to start, is with yourself. And you were talking about a check-in, so do a thermometer check.
Thing
that I do is, it's a simple tool called the Wheel of Life, and it looks at all the aspects of your life, and you get to pick them. So for health and recreation, you know, are you taking care of yourself? Are you eating well? For family, how's your relationship with your parents? How's your relationship with your children, if you have them? How are your relationship with siblings? Sometimes that can bring some
oh, yeah, especially with
up.
Christmas time, not that long before
yeah,
us.
Yeah, or Thanksgiving dinner, right?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so all of these little areas in our life, they actually are a great way of looking at how fulfilled am I there now, and what would it be to really take that to a 10 out of 10 or beyond. And so that's kind of like what I call a Polaroid of where you are now.
Nice.
And so it's a place to start from.
I think that's really good. And once you've figured out where, say, perhaps you're lacking in one part of the wheel,
mm-hmm.
where you'd like to be a little bit more filled up, are there some tools that they can do, like with you, when they, if they sign up, say, for coaching, that they can start working on mm-hmm. things personally?
Yeah. A lot of people say, how does this coaching thing work? Because
mm-hmm.
It's a pretty new profession, and is it like being a sports team coach? So yes, for example, like high performance teams, a lot of those coaching use visualization exercises. So what is it that you would like to see? See yourself there. Mm. But it's more than just a dream and something that's completely out of touch with reality. It's actually creating that vision for yourself and then going back and backfilling all the things that you need to get there. So what I love about coaching is that it's really about activating that dream muscle, that want muscle, being in touch with the things that you really desire in your life, and then also being practical about it. Where am I now, and how do I move forward to where I want to be?
So how do you include someone else in your life when you're on your path and you want love, but you're trying to find time to get all this stuff in, and you're dealing with another human entity? So how
and
does
there's
that
only
work?
24 hours.
Yes.
And a lot of us are struggling with that. Balance is key. I think that's a really big one, and also really keeping clear on what's important.
Okay.
There are so many things that are competing for our attention. Right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Walk down the street, flip on the TV. You know, even Facebook knows what I want more than I do sometimes. You know, as things change, I can see my ads changing. And so we're being bombarded. And it's not enough to just say, okay, we're being bombarded. I'm overloaded. I'm going to just click it all off and not be connected. But really being clear on what's important and where those things lie in accordance with your time.
Okay.
So being really conscious of how we spend our time.
Okay, so part of it probably is just taking a second to breathe, mm-hmm. and actually looking at and reevaluating, going back to that wheel, which is nice because people get 97% of their information from what they see, mm-hmm. and 3% from what they hear. So I like the fact that you do the wheel because they can really see that really clearly. And it's like, okay, and then from there actually creating the list in terms of I almost like to think of it as stairs, where it's like, okay, here's your goal. And this is where I am now. And these are the steps, and making them not nice, small, manageable steps to get to the next level.
Yeah. Coaching with me is really about sustainable change. So it's not like going to a workshop where you're going to get really pumped up and go, woo, I'm going to do this. This is fantastic. And then 3 weeks later, you're kind of in a rut, or maybe even lower than you were before because you tried something new and it didn't.
It didn't maintain.
So really what we're looking for is a shift in your perspective about your current situation or what you want. And it is something that you, something changes inside of you. And when you change, your world can't help but change.
That makes sense. So in terms of dating someone, how to balance the work-life, because your wheel is going to shift because you meet that person, boy meets girl, girl meets girl, boy meets boy. Like, I mean, our world's so unique these days. And how do we keep that balance? Because, of course, friends get upset, or it's like, hey, why aren't you going, you know, why aren't we doing our weekly ice cream treat or whatever it is?
Until the first fight, right?
Exactly. Which is when we need the chocolate.
When you need the chocolate, and then you need the friends, and they're like, who are you again?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a great question. I think communication, it seems so simple, but it's so fundamental. So communication,
and it's so hard.
It is,
sometimes.
It is. I work with this stuff all the time, and yet in my own relationship and with my own family, that's often the biggest challenge. And I think, oh, I do this for a living. Why is this so hard? It should be easy. But it's true, when we're emotionally invested and we care so much, sometimes that those are the hardest people it is to share those things that are near and dear to your heart. And so really taking the time to communicate and being honest and direct, which also can be really hard.
It can be, especially if you've been in a relationship for a little while with someone, mm-hmm. and trying to change gears in terms of, say, something's not working, which I like to think of Valentine's Day again, like that check-in, so not just checking in for yourself, which I love the wheel. But is there any exercises in terms of with your partner that somebody can do?
Well, we were talking about communication, and what came to mind was really understanding what your conflict style is.
Okay.
So how do you deal with conflict? Are you an avoider?
I'm an avoider.
So there might be a lot underneath your carpet that can get swept out. So some people, when they see conflict, they just look the other way, and they hope that it doesn't, you know, creep up behind them.
That's my boyfriend.
Some people are collaborators, so they actually work together on figuring out what's going on. Some people are compromisers. So, for example, if you want ice cream and I want pizza, you know, instead of going to head, okay, let's just do what you want. and they give in.
Mm.
Right? And some people actually do go head-to-head with each other, and it ends up being a big blow-up. So really understanding what your conflict style is will help you understand how best to approach some of the communications and to address your style and what weaknesses it might bring to your communication.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in terms of looking at your partner's style as well, because I guess people, like you're saying, sometimes don't communicate in the same mm-hmm. fashion. So being able to recognize it, and even though it's different, it doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just...
Yeah, it really is about what works for the both of you. I would mm-hmm. advocate that working towards collaborative problem solving is probably where you're probably going to find the most fulfillment mm-hmm. for both of you. And of course, we don't... I kind of encourage people not to work on each other, to work on themselves, and to really model what it is that they're wanting to be with the other person.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my two cents on that.
Thank you. What in regards to balancing, so between losing yourself in a relationship and basically carrying those walls up where it's almost like, for example, criterialist, which I know you and I were chatting about in regards to in our pre-show chat today, where it was just like sometimes people have a criterialist, they stick to it and say, oh, you don't have this quality, so I don't think I should be with you. Mm-hmm. And where's that fine balance where it's almost using that as a barrier to love?
Mm. Yeah, we were joking about in high school, I think we did an exercise where, you know, write down all the things that you want in your prospective partner, and it gets down to eye color and height and weight and do they do sports or do they not and what kind of job that they have. And often those things become the things that actually hold us back from really mm. connecting with somebody that's going to be wonderful for us. If you look at the qualities in a person that you want, do you want them to be kind? Do you want them to be a person of integrity? Do you want them to be able to be direct with you?
Mm.
All those types of things rather than the details.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's lots of room for something to happen. Yeah, and I think it was funny. I had a client just this last week, and she was saying, I look at my friend, and she's married, and she has kids, and she has a wonderful home, and, you know, she has all the stuff that I want, and I don't have it, and I want that, and her life is perfect. And I said, well, what do you think if you walked up to the window of her house, and she didn't think that you were looking in, what do you think you might see? And she thought for a moment, and she said, well, I guess, you know, her life isn't so perfect either. And so sometimes we want things, and we create in our heads the idea that it's going to be the everything to make us happy.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I work with people on is really, what is it to be happy? And what is it to really find fulfillment? And then how do we maintain a state of joy in our lives, whether we're happy or sad, so that we can maintain that balance? Sometimes also, you know, when you have a partner that's quite different from you
mm-hmm.
and they might be stronger in some areas or really, maybe they don't demand it, but some way we give a little bit of ourselves away.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And so little by little, we adjust and we change and we accommodate. And I'm not saying it's always women, but women tend to...
Well, we're caregivers in general by nature.
Tend to, as a generalization, do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day wake up and we have moved so far from what normal is for us, we have no idea how we got there. And so I think, you know, what you're talking about earlier about your friends say, where did you go and why aren't you spending time with me? Really important to continue with your friendships that are key, because they're going to help keep you anchored to the things and be true to yourself. And also doing the things that fulfill you and sustain you, the things that you enjoy. So, yeah. I can see the wheels turning over
there. I was actually going to, one of the things you brought up earlier was communication is really key, being honest and direct. And one of the other things we talked about in our pre-show chat was about the love languages. And you'd mm-hmm. mentioned you'd very recently done a presentation in regards to love languages. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that, because people do have different communication styles, just as they have different conflict styles.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of doing a 10-minute presentation at BNI Amplify downtown about the love languages, and I called it depositing into the emotional bank account.
I love it.
Yeah. And so Dr. Chapman has this book called The Five Love Languages, mm-hmm. and it talks about the different ways that we understand and we give and receive love. And so it talks about some people, it's really about gifts, you know, giving presents. They don't have to be expensive, but if they include diamonds, that's fantastic.
They are a girl's best friend.
That's right. But, you know, even little things, too. Mm-hmm. Acts of service, which is doing things for other people. The third one is physical touch. The fourth one, and I would say that doesn't necessarily translate to sex.
No.
Right? So holding hands, rubbing somebody's back, a massage, a hug, a little cuddle. Mm-hmm. So that a lot of times physical touch is translated into equal to sex. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be. In the love languages, it's not necessarily sex. Arm around the shoulders, right? Words of affirmation, which are acknowledgments, so thanking your partner, recognizing where they did a great job or they did something thoughtful for you. And the last one is quality time. And I know definitely in the age of Twitter and Facebook and all the texting, all the things that take up and demand our attention immediately, sometimes quality time you really have to be intentional about.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that we each have one of these five ways of understanding love, and that's going to be the natural way that we show it too. So do you know what your love language is?
Mine is quality time.
Okay.
Because it always has to be about events for me. Mm-hmm. And I always have to check in that in terms of the quality time, it can't be one big blessed starburst of it where I actually have to have quality time all the way through my days.
Okay.
So, and it's funny, earlier we were also chatting about the Twitter, the Facebook, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I've actually had to basically maintain that. Just in regards to turning it off when I come home and making sure that I'm there 100% for my partner.
Mm-hmm. So imagine if your partner's gift was, or your gift, your partner's language was gifts. And so he's saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. Here is something that I've gotten for you. Oh, I saw this, I thought you might like it. You come home, there's flowers on the table. And then he's busy. And you're saying, I'm not feeling very loved here, and you're wanting to spend time with him, and he's feeling a little bit, you know, unshowered with attention because he's not receiving gifts from you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're speaking in two different languages, and neither one is right, neither one is wrong. It's just a different language. So the idea of the emotional bank account is that with each act of one of the languages, we're making a deposit into each other's bank account. And like currencies, they're just different forms of money, right? They're just different forms of currency. The languages are just different. And so they're not always one for one, or there's not a direct translation, but we're making deposits into each other's accounts.
That's a really great analogy.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Thanks.
And Gary Chapman's work is huge, but I've never heard the bank account, and I really like that description.
Yeah.
It's great. And it is true. You can actually go online as well and answer a little questionnaire on his website where mm-hmm. you can actually find out what your love language is, which can be really helpful. And it is good in terms of just keeping in check, too, because mm-hmm. especially if you do something special for somebody and they don't, and say, like, giving the gifts, and it's like, what do you mean? I was busy, and I of course I care. That's why I bought you flowers. Hello. And so then there's that resentment that goes back and forth as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. In regards to that, I know Harville Hendrix has got some great stuff, mm-hmm. and I think I was telling you about him. He's one of my favorites, where he has an imago where his concept with it is basically that, and it's an interesting theory, and I'd love to know what your thoughts are in regards to it. Basically that we fall for people or we connect with people because usually there's something in childhood that we haven't cured yet. So basically in terms of love relationships, it's usually a lot of the conflicts that we had that are unresolved with the parent that we had the most conflict with growing up.
That's loaded.
Okay.
I'm thinking, how do I answer this without being specific in my answer?
Okay,
to,
fair enough.
Yeah, just for confidentiality. But what I've experienced in working with some of my clients is that people tend to either have those deep connections or not. Some people are quite stuck or really still kind of wrestling through, or maybe even haven't acknowledged them.
Mm.
And so I think it's really where it's unresolved that those awarenesses don't always come right away, right? Mm-hmm. When we resolve them, or when we're aware of them and we're making conscious choices around why we're doing things, then we don't have to be bound by the past.
That's true.
Yeah.
And it's getting rid of those stories. Mm-hmm. So I know you and I were chatting about 30-second pitch sometimes, yeah, where people marry their stories and they use those as a crutch. So almost like the woman you're mentioning in regards to about the house, where it's like, if I had all this stuff, it would be great, where it's almost like a reverse story. But it's like, because I don't have it, that's why I'm stuck where I am, and I'm not going to move forward because I don't have it until I get it. It's just like the people who say, well, until I lose 15 pounds, I'm not going to be able to do anything with my life, and I'll never be happy.
Yeah, it's and sometimes your friends aren't always going to call you on that, right?
That's true.
They'll sit and listen to you and empathize, and they're being great friends. But a coach will say, okay, so I don't buy that anymore, because you are an amazing person and you have the ability to create whatever you want in your life. So what do you want to do about it? And throw it back towards you.
So it's almost like reflecting back what really is underneath all the bull.
Yeah, a lot of it is.
Okay. Is there any challenging situations where sometimes, in terms of especially relationships, I like to think of in terms of if you're going to a coach in terms of a relationship to mm-hmm. move forward on issues. I actually recommend people do it before they get married, because I think it's actually really useful. And it's one of the one things I do really love about church, is the fact they actually make you go to premarital right. counseling beforehand, mm-hmm. which I think people are able to, at least, if not resolve issues, at least be aware of where there might be key places, perhaps in money, religion, whether how they want to raise their children, etc.
All the things that people don't always talk about,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. Because we've been told not to talk about money or religion, even though we do it all the time right. on Twitter these days.
And those actually are the things that couples fight about the most. Mm-hmm. Money, sex, and not Twitter.
No. Well, but, we do, but...
But, no. but child-rearing, right? And
yes.
So my dad is actually a pastor, and he does premarital counseling with any couple that he marries. And he tells me, you know, I'm actually not happy, but I know that I'm doing my job when a percentage of the couples that come to me for premarital don't actually go through and get married. Because there are a lot of times where these topics aren't really talked about in a really intense way to really get to the heart of what's important to yeah. each other. Yeah.
And that's why I've always thought coaching is really vital, especially before somebody gets married, mm-hmm. because before you take that, it's a big step, both financially, legally, yeah. it's huge, and spiritually, and mm-hmm. just heart. It's a really, really big thing. So I think it's really important, if possible, to sit down with the coach, somebody who can reflect back things, call you on things, and both people where it's a party that's not part of your, you know, your life, where you're hiring somebody to do it, where they can be objective but supportive at the same time.
Mm-hmm. If any of your listeners are interested, mm-hmm. I suggest that when they're looking for a coach or somebody to work through stuff like that, they go and make sure that they're trained in either couples or organizational coaching.
Okay.
Because when you look at one-on-one coaching, there's a different dynamic when you add another person, because it's not just those two people, but actually the entity of the relationship itself.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. So that would be one of the key questions. Mm-hmm. Is there, when you are going through finding a coach, it's almost like dating in some way, where it's trying to see if it's the right fit. And when you've got two people, mm-hmm. is that challenging at times, or?
I think that working with a coach, mm-hmm. it really is about the relationship. You're absolutely right. So one thing that is really important, I think, is that the person that you're working with is trained, and that they're a member of the International Coach Federation, which is
an
accrediting body. Right now, anybody can hang their shingle out and say that they're a coach. It's actually an unregulated profession. They're working on international regulations right now, but it's unregulated. So I think it's really important to work with somebody that's trained. And the other thing, you're right, it really is about fit. So do you connect with that person? If you do not connect, you're not going to really go very far,
mm-hmm.
because you really need to feel like that person really gets you and really is going to champion you when you are feeling like, I don't know where to go, I don't really see what is out there for me. They are on your team 110%. And the other thing is, I really believe that through connecting with other people, we find healing.
Yes, definitely.
And that's a significant part of the coaching relationship.
And interestingly, that's the whole imago thing as well with the Harville Hendricks, where it's that we're meant to be together and connect with people to heal.
Absolutely.
And except for you, when you have a coach, they've got the skill set to help you do that. When is it too much where it becomes therapy, where it's like, okay, I need to refer you to somebody else because this is a little too heavy?
Mm-hmm. Great question. I get asked that a lot, too. What's the difference between coaching and consulting and therapy?
Mm-hmm.
So coaching is really about the current situation and where we move forward. So it's not just forward-driven. If it was all about action, our clients would get really burnt out.
Okay.
It's also about connecting with right now.
Mm.
Therapy tends, in traditional therapy, tends to be past, really diving into the past and going into the current context.
Okay.
So that would be, you know, how I would know when I feel like the clients are really, really stuck in the past and are not really ready to let go.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there is, you know, any mental illness or any other issues like that, then it's definitely a place for therapy.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Has that ever happened in terms of with couples that you've had come in where it's one of those things and just delicately having to broach and refer them to someone else who is trained in terms of dealing with the mental ill health, if it turns out it's more of a medical as opposed to a coaching issue?
I haven't had that situation.
Okay.
I think one of the things that a lot of coaches offer is an initial session that's not part of a longer term commitment. And it's really, you're right, it's just like a date. It's you checking me out as your coach and me as your coach checking you out as a potential client and saying, is this going to work for both of us?
Mm-hmm.
So,
if somebody is going to set up for coaching, is there a certain, I imagine there must be a certain amount of time where you'd want to book a certain amount of sessions just in terms of making sure progress depending on the goal set, etc.
Well, one of the cool things about coaching is that the client's in charge.
Okay.
So they're really the one that gets to say how much they want to meet,
okay,
or how often they want to meet. What I ask for my clients is that the first session that we set up is 2 hours long, and we take that Polaroid, we do some visioning, we talk about what's going on right now, we start defining some of their values, and it really is like digging up around and saying, oh, where's some good stuff to work with, right?
Got it.
Yeah, and then after that, I ask for a three-month commitment. Now, it really is up to the client. Do they want to meet once a month, twice a month, or three times a month?
Mm-hmm.
And my practice is international because I do meet primarily over the phone,
nice,
although I do work out of a clinic in Vancouver as well.
Okay. Is there any certain things you'd recommend in terms of if somebody is going to go, wants to get married and they are going to look for a coach in terms of how many sessions you think in terms of just trying to set up parameters in terms of moving forward? Because that is a big commitment in terms of marriage. So just certain things that they should be looking at and working through perhaps. And you'd mentioned sex, money, and religion. Those are three key things as well as the childbearing. So that's child-rearing.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was a Freudian slip.
Child-rearing. I don't have a set number of sessions. I know that a lot of premarital counseling is 6 to 10 weeks.
Okay.
There are some churches that offer group premarital counseling. It really depends on what kind of program you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, coaches work on a dynamic basis, so it's really what the clients bring to the call.
Okay.
There are a number of really good books and workbooks that you can work through with your coach. So the coach can really facilitate the conversation as well between partners and really listen, because we're trained to really listen for the nuances behind the words that you say.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
So, you know, picking up where there might be tension or where there might be a little bit of hesitancy and what's behind that.
Okay.
Or the uncertainty or the real passion, you know, I really know that I want this. And, okay, yes, wife-to-be, you really, really want this. Husband-to-be, do you hear that? Like, do you hear how important that is? And where do you sit on that topic? So that's where a coach can really be valuable.
I think it could be really valuable as well, especially if people have been in a long-term relationship and there's things that want to change. One thing I do hear about sometimes is in terms of sexuality, when people have been together for a long time, usually there tends to be one partner or the other that tends to have a higher libido, and it does change through life because women, of course, we peak in our mid-30s and men start to go down. And
I think they peak at 18.
Yes, that's true in many ways. but in regards to that, if there's some things in terms of guiding, mm-hmm. A girlfriend of mine this morning, when I mentioned us having you on the show, she was quite excited. And one of the things I'm supposed to ask you about is just in regards to balancing that out, because a lot of women we do know in our own circle, we'll have sex with our long-term partners even though they aren't necessarily totally in the mood. Mm-hmm. Whereas for a man to actually accommodate a woman, sometimes that can be a little bit more challenging because it's harder for them.
And I think if you ask a lot of men, they wouldn't feel like they were asked to accommodate the women that they were with.
Yes. Yeah, they
again,
feel it's a demand.
In generals, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a sensitive topic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people aren't really open about talking about it.
Not like, at all.
Nope. And going back to the analogy of the house, I think if we talked with each other and we said, this is really what's going on for me, I'm stressed, I'm tired, maybe you have kids at home and it's hard to find privacy, mm-hmm. or you're covered in baby spit up, but these things are realities, right?
Yeah.
When you have a relationship and your body changes, so maybe you have body image issues, there are a lot of things that come up.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that, again, is so important is talking and speaking from your heart about how mm-hmm. you feel about it in a loving way, in a respectful way, but really what's true for you. Here's what's going on for me right now. I am so tired, and I really do love you, but I'm really not in the mood. Most partners, I think if you talk to them in that way, would absolutely agree. They don't want you to fake it because they'd be mortified if they knew that you were. And so it's really important to have that really open, honest discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on the flip side, it's also really important to take responsibility for how you're feeling and also about how your body's doing. I was listening to a talk by Dr. Melissa Carr from Active Life Health, and she was talking about endorphins. And I didn't know that actually the word endorphin comes from, I can't remember the technical term, but it was a breakdown of basically natural morphines that your body, morphine-like substances that your body produces. So spicy food, anxiety, stress can all produce endorphins, but so can passion, excitement, and sex and orgasms. And what endorphins do is they allow your body to actually deal with the stress that they're under, to be mm-hmm. able to continue on, and also to stop pain sensation from going to the rest of your body. So it's almost like it gets into a cycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so how do we break out of that cycle?
And how do we break out of that cycle?
That's a good one, and I think a lot of people have faced that. So, again, first of all, being responsible,
okay.
right? This is my body, and I am, a part of my being is actually being a sexual being. And part of my being is also needing to connect with other people and wanting to connect with my partner. And so from there, it really is about you personally, and part of it goes mm-hmm. back to those love languages too. If you're not feeling very loved, and if you're not feeling very connected to your partner, for some people it's really hard to have sex. Some mm-hmm. people can just fuck, right?
Yes.
But not everybody can. And so if you're one of those who can't, and I think we're talking about more the lovemaking and really being passionate with your partner, tapping into that side of you when you're not feeling very loved is kind of hard.
Mm-hmm. Or the other thing in terms of on the flip side of that, where it's actually the man who is having erectile dysfunction, perhaps, mm-hmm. and is having difficulty. Because I think sometimes, especially as women, especially in North America, we're almost raised where it's like, oh, you know, he's always going to want it. It's your job to say no as a girl. Mm-hmm. And some of that's the key messaging we get in our school systems, which hopefully that will change now that Julia Saunders is rewriting things. She's my old co-host. And for a lot of the school districts, but it's an interesting thing. So almost as women, sometimes it almost affects ego, where if the man's not in the mood, and so turning it away from it being an ego thing and an actual looking at the physicality, why is it changing? Which some of it is because of age and as they get older, it can be challenging.
And you're right, a lot of we get a lot of roles ideas.
Yes, right? Men and
the
women.
The women are supposed to be demure and not sex crazed, and the men are supposed to want it all the time. And so looking at where we get the stereotypes for our roles in the relationship, both as a partner as well as a sexual partner, are really important. I think that most people and most of the friends in my age group, we did not see our parents be really physical with each other.
No.
You know, I don't think I ever, sorry, Mom, if you're listening, but I don't think I ever saw my mom sit on my dad's knee. And it's not that they didn't love each other. I know that they love each other very much.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't see that side of their relationship. It was behind closed doors. And so when we then try to work through some of those things ourselves, it's really hard because you don't have a model to look to to see how that was resolved.
Do you think that will change where people are more affectionate now or not with technology? Because now that we've got social media and different ways of communicating, is it making us more affectionate when we actually see each other face to face, or are we not?
I think that a lot of that has to do with cultural norms.
Okay.
And the cultural norms are changing.
Yes.
We're not apron at the door, in the clean dress from after cleaning during the day when our husbands come home. And definitely what we see does impact what we view as the norm and what's acceptable in public. I think also the more we just really are clear on what we want out of our relationships and what we want with each other and what we want to make together, that changes as well. And I really see that a lot with people coming and saying, you know, here's what I want, and you know, it doesn't matter to me so much what everybody else is doing. I'm not like them. And so, yeah, I hear that a lot more too.
Okay. In terms of the I'm not like them factor, does that make people more isolated as opposed to connecting?
Yeah.
And
we were talking about this too. I heard this really fantastic term, and it said it was that now people are chronically unique. And it's like, I'm so different. Nobody else is experiencing the things that I am. I think in a way that nobody else does. And you're right, it can have an isolating effect. One of the things that is so important to me is connecting people with themselves and then connecting them with each other. Because I think we are born to be a part of community, whatever that community looks like. And when we isolate ourselves from the community, it's almost like we unplug from the things that, from the thing that actually can help fuel us and guide us and mentor us and shape us and keep us in line. Instead of, you know, we were talking about when you're in a relationship and you kind of get lost in it and you come back up and surface and you go, "Ooh, where am I?"
Mm-hmm.
If you had stayed part of your community, it would have helped you stay in balance.
Which that makes sense, especially both for violence as well as just being taken care of and as a general. Which I think is important.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to relationships, any thoughts in terms of how to spark it up again when people start taking it for granted? And I use the word spark, but I think I really mean intimacy, like where they're not connecting.
I think one of the big challenges that couples face today is time. And I remember reading a while ago, okay, it's really important that you schedule time into your schedule and make sure into your Outlook calendar, right? Quality time. And I thought, how cheesy is that? And I think it's really true. As resistant as I am, I think it's really important. My partner is a busy realtor, and so he's on call all the time. And so we really try to make Wednesday our day off together. It's a little bit unorthodox. It's not, you know, but he's working the weekends. So we really try, and we really try to guard that time to make sure that we have it together, even if it's, you know, walking down to Best Buy and shopping for an entertainment unit, but it's something for our home, and it's something that we both want input, and we want to do it together because it's a home that we're creating together. So I think that time is super important. Another one is, if you want to have intimate sexual time together, mm-hmm. it'd probably be good to end up in the bed at the same time.
Yes.
At the time where you're both awake. So if your partner's a night owl and you're a morning person, or I have a huge amount of empathy for couples where one works a night shift and one works a day.
Mm.
This can be super challenging, right? You're on just totally different sleep schedules. And so one is, you know, kiss on the cheek before the one goes out the door and they're still kind of sleepy. So finding that time where it's both your alert time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. It was actually interesting. A few years ago, Tanya Diamond, who is a tantric sex teacher, she's out of Seattle, and we've had her on the show before, and it was quite interesting because at her workshop in Vancouver, it was a couple that had been together and some had been over 10, 15 years, and she went around the room and asked them what they wanted, and everybody said intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Then she went around and asked everybody to write on a piece of paper what intimacy meant for them. And each person had a different concept of what intimacy wanted. Some people it was more sex, other people it was being hugged. One woman even wrote, take the garbage out. So it was quite interesting where it actually comes back down to those love languages again, which is why I love Gary Chapman's work. So
I was just going to say, because you can translate each of those things to different areas that aren't being met. Yeah.
Yeah. What would you recommend if you could wave a magic wand and change what is taught in the school curriculum for kids, like in terms of for some of the lessons that you teach people now as adults for coaching? What are some of those things you'd like to teach kids early on if you could go and wave that magic wand and change it?
That's a loaded question. I have a teenager.
Okay.
I don't know if it totally answers your question. I know that there was a huge need for the self-esteem movement and also the rights of the child, so making sure that the child understands that they are an important person and that they have the right to be respected. I think where some of that went sideways was that also is counterbalanced with the part that they also have a responsibility to family and to community. And that they are responsible for contributing and being connected to that. And so there are privileges of being part of a community or family, but there are also responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the piece that I would add.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I remember my 7-year-old coming home. She's not 7 now, but she came home. And was going on about something. I said, okay, not right now. She goes, I have a right to be heard. I'm important too. And I went, whoa, where is this coming from? And it really is about, that self-esteem movement. So
I think it's important. The other thing I'd love to see change, and I don't know if it has yet, I know Julia Saunders is working towards it, is in terms of with sex ed in the school, actually connecting it with relational stuff. So as opposed mm-hmm. to just, you'll know when you're in love, blah, 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 but mm-hmm. actually teaching some tools in terms of relational health, which I think could be beneficial all across the board. Yeah. So
I think one of the great things that they are doing is the emotional intelligence piece. And so really working on building empathy skills and learning to understand each other's point of view. So I think that's that. If we were going to give a kudos to the school system, that's one thing that they've really worked on building.
I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
What's next for you personally?
Ooh, a number of things. I'm actually giving a talk on Tuesday about putting the I back into team, both in relationships but also in the corporate setting. And so looking at corporate teams and how we work together and understanding each other's differences through the frame of the Myers-Briggs Kiersey type indicator. So it types out 4 different parameters.
Okay.
And they're all spectrums. And so, you know, introvert, how we get our information, how we make decisions, how we order our world, and how we find our energy. And so we all have parts of this in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And as we learn about ourselves and also about each other, then we can frame information or frame projects or frame tasks at hand or how we work together to our strengths.
I think that sounds really neat.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
I've always wondered what that Myers-Briggs thing was. So
Come Tuesday, you'll find out.
I will definitely have to come Tuesday. If some of our listeners want to come Tuesdays, are they able to come?
Absolutely. If they want, they can come to my website. It's www.divafish.com, or email me at coach@divafish.com, and I'd be happy to give them more information. What I can do is also set up a blog post for your listeners. And you were talking about premarital counseling, and I have a couple books that are great resources, as well as an invite to the presentation. Or if they have a group that they would like to have me come and sit down and talk with, I'd be happy to do that too. I also am putting together a women's group. So it's tapping into community of women to talk about the truth about what's going on behind their closed doors.
Tell me a little bit more about that, because that makes me think of burkas and stuff like that.
No burkas, although if you wear one, you're welcome to bring it. It goes back to what you were talking about, how people get isolated. And I think that I remember a long time ago, I watched an episode of Desperate Housewives, and one of the women was dealing, I can't remember her name, Lynette has all these kids, right? And they were driving her crazy, and she was exhausted. And so she drops her kids off at one woman's house and just runs out the door, and her friends run to find her. And she said, I'm a terrible mom. I've been taking my kids' ADD medication to try and keep up with them. And, you know, I'm impatient, and my house isn't clean. And they look at her, and they're like, yeah, it was like that for us too when we had kids. And she said something, and it really struck me, this character. And she said, we should really tell each other these things. And I think there's not enough of that, saying, my life is not perfect. I'm a coach, and I coach people on life. But my life is far from perfect, but I really am delighted with the life that I have. And so when we're honest with the things that aren't going right in our lives, I think it allows other people to have that permission to be imperfect, because we all are perfectly imperfect.
I like that expression.
Yeah. So the idea is that the group will meet as a group and talk about some of these things and talk about hot topics, and then also do one-on-one coaching to get more individual work done.
How often are you thinking this group will meet?
I have no idea. This is in my dream stage right now. But the group will probably meet once to start, and then every 2 weeks. Mm. And then the coaching will be again probably 3 times a month.
I think that sounds really neat, and I think that's very needed, and especially for women. And I'm going to quote Dr. John Gray, who I love from Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, where it's really important for women to socialize. It actually increases our levels of oxytocin, which is the cuddle hormone, which comes from passion as well, and it's the one that makes you fall in love with your child when you see it. It's that love, literally the love at first sight. And I think it's important. I think that's really, really key. Again, dealing with women, finding ways, because we aren't meant to be isolated. We're supposed to be connecting with people. And I always think of it back in the caveman era where, you know, men had to be super duper silent for hours so they could club the game and bring it back to their lady. Whereas women, we were multitasking. We were gathering firewood. We were doing all sorts of things like that, collecting berries and minding the children at the same time and chatting. So then that way we kept the wild animals away and kept our families safe. So we really need that on that level, just because even though we've evolved, it's still at our root.
It is, and I think a lot has changed in our world, and so as those changes happen, there's a lot of confusion about what the roles are.
Yes.
And so a lot of times I actually feel, I tell my male friends, you know, I really feel bad for you, because I wouldn't want to have to deal with women and dating and trying to understand what they want when they don't know.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes women want to be, again, generalizing, I think people want to be so independent that it's really hard when you finally find somebody that you want to connect with. I know I've struggled with this. Like, how do I be with being dependent on somebody else? And what does that mean? And so how do I maintain my own stability but allow them to care for me and allow them to give to me and to receive it graciously?
And how do we do that?
Good question. The good start is to say thank you. where does a coach get coaching? Well, they get their own coach. And my coach said, start with thank you. And it goes from there. And really, from there, for me, a lot of it was around trust, trusting that my partner's going to be there. I know how to go it alone. And so I can do that just fine. But when I'm connected to somebody and when I depend on them and I grow into a relationship with them and we grow around each other, and then if they're not there, that's going to be a million times worse than doing it alone before. So there's a lot of fear there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I know my friend Margaret Donnellis, who's another coach, mm-hmm. she actually recommends, she doesn't recommend, but she says women actually will go out of their way to avoid feeling fear, whereas men will go out of their way to avoid feeling shame. So it's...
Yeah, and fear and shame are at the root of a lot of our stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if you dig down underneath, mm-hmm. Fear and shame are at the root of a lot of it. And so, but anger is a great secondary emotion that masks a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other things that we do to kind of, to keep, you know, like you were talking about, building those walls so that we have the happy home, we have the happy life, and we have this projection that everything is great. It doesn't have to be great, but real is really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One last thing I wanted to touch on. You said about living in joy.
Mm.
And what does that mean to you?
Oh, to me, it's really about a frame of mind. It's a perspective. So happy, to me, is temporal. It really is dependent on my circumstances. I'm happy when I'm pottying. I'm happy when I'm dancing. I'm happy when I'm surfing. I'm happy when I'm connecting with somebody else and learning about them.
Mm-hmm.
But what when, if I'm not around those things, then what am I? If I'm defining my state of happiness by what's going on around me, then I'm going to be a yo-yo, and I'm going to be an emotional yo-yo because I'm dependent on everything else.
Mm-hmm.
For me, choosing joy is about really choosing a frame of mind that of contentment and of peace with my life, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
Taking it with the lumps and really, you know, enjoying the highs of a really fantastic, exhilarating life, but choosing a state of joy.
And who wouldn't want that? I think that's cool. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
I've had a great time.
Well, I will have to have you back on about some other topics.
I'd love it.
And we'll look forward to seeing you on Tuesday, which will be really great. So listeners, if you want to connect with Anne, you can reach her on her website. And I'm just going to have her plug it
one
more time.
It's www.divafish.com or coach, @divafish.com.
Thank you very much. And you've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Up next is going to be Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He will be guiding you through his wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. Until next time, Sexy in Van City Radio. Adios, everyone.
CITR 101.9 FM and Timber are proud to present Sebado featuring Quasi, February 11th at the Rickshaw. Founded by legendary Dinosaur Jr. bassist Lou Barlow and touring in support of the reissue of their classic album Bake Sale, Sebado are true pioneers in the world of lo-fi indie rock. This is a licensed, all-ages show with advanced tickets available at Red Cat, Zulu, High Life, TicketWeb.ca, and in Victoria at Ditch Records.